On behalf of Rebuilding Your Life Radio and the Train Your Brain, Claim Your Power calls, welcome. I'm your host, Susan Sciarrico. I'm a transformational life and business coach who finds inspiration and instruction from the stories of others. One story in particular caught my attention recently. It's an example of how we become aware of an idea, follow it, and go on to create something special for ourselves and others. If you have an idea like that and would like assistance on how to pursue it, listen to the end of this call and I'll tell you how to contact us. Welcome to the show. Anita Jepson Gilbert is the author I referenced just earlier. Her husband showed her an item about Nazra, Peru, and she began to dig into the subject. So let's find out more because it's truly fascinating. Please wave your hands to welcome and meet Anita Jepson Gilbert. Hello, Anita. Welcome.
Well, thank you so very much. This is exciting.
I'm glad. I'm excited to have you here today. Is this your first book?
Well, I had two small chapbooks of poetry published before, but this is the first longer book, and it is the first children's book that I have done. So, yes, it is really the first major piece that is out there.
But a beautiful piece, I might say. When did you first become interested in the lines at Nazra?
Well, Nazca is a
Nazca. Yeah, thank you.
Place in Peru, South America. I had never really heard of it before my husband introduced me to it. He was reading a book on it, but he already had read several books. He was quite knowledgeable of this place. And this was back in the 1980s. And, you know, this was before Google. And so I didn't have access to the Internet to do research on it. So I just had to find any books that had been published. And there, you know, about five or six really fine books that people have written, people who have gone down there and, you know, and done some scientific works. And so I started then in the 1980s.
Wow. Was there one particular person that was of interest to you?
Well, yes, everything I was reading was referencing the work of this woman, scientist, a mathematician. Her name is Maria Reich. She had been down there for years measuring these lines and mapping them. And yes, and so everything was, you know, saying, according to Dr. Reich, you know, and then Dr. Reich's theory is, and I thought, who is this woman? I must find out a little bit about her. And so I was, again, without Google, you know, you can't do a lot of your own research on people.
It's difficult, but, yes.
I started to think about her a lot from just what I could gather in these other books about the lines. And, I wrote this poem, and I called it Maria and the Stars of Nazca. And then I really wanted her to be able to read it, but I didn't know where she was. But I figured if she was alive, she was probably in Nazca. And so I sent it to Dr. Maria Reich, Nazca, Peru, asking if I was misrepresenting her in any way. I got a reply from her sister, Renata, who said, I read your poem to Maria, and she likes it very much. And she is sending her book to you from Germany. And then I was on my way to writing this children's book. You know, if she didn't like it, then I certainly wouldn't put it out. But if she liked it, I thought, that's my, you know, go-ahead sign. And so that's what I did.
Well, question, how did she get to from Germany to Peru?
Oh, well, when she was in Germany, this was before World War II, she didn't know anything about these lines because nobody had been writing about them. No, you know, people, didn't know about them, really. Even scientists didn't know about them yet. She wanted to just go anywhere, really, out of Germany, because she was very wary of what was happening in the military buildup there, and some other things bothered her, too. She just wanted to leave Germany. She had, like, a doctorate in mathematics, and she knew a lot of the sciences. She could teach anywhere in the world, but she answered an ad in the paper from the German consul who was in Cusco, Peru, asking for a teacher to come to teach his two little children in Cusco, because whenever they would have to go back to Germany, they needed to know, you know, how to study in German and everything like that. So she wrote and said, I would love to come there and, you know, take care of the children, teach them. So that's really what brought her, and she knew nothing about the Nazca lines.
Well, how did she find out?
Well, she met Paul Kosick, an American who was flying his airplane around the areas there, wherever there would be water for irrigation. And, the farmers, you know, needed to have access to those kind of maps. And so he was helping them out, but, you had to see from above, and he could map for them. But that's when he saw these very strange illustrations on the desert. He couldn't imagine, what are these pictures of animals? And he's clear up in the sky, very high. He's thinking, these things must be huge if I can see them from up here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how, when he met Maria, he knew how interested she was in science and geography, all these things. And so he said, Maria, you probably love to see what I just saw not too long ago. And that was the beginning. He took her up, and then she was in love with those lines.
Yeah. And so did she choose to stay there then at that point?
Yes, she did. She would go hitchhiking on the Pan American Highway out of Lima, then, because I have to say that the German consul was called back to Germany when the war started, and in 1941, and so she was left on her own there because she didn't want to go back to Germany, so she got a job teaching in Lima at the university, and so she'd get out there on the Pan American Highway and hitchhike, because that highway went straight through that Nazca Desert where the lines were made. And she'd go down there and stay and do her work measuring lines and all these, whatever she could write about them. And then when the war was over, she actually was allowed to leave Lima, you know, and go live down there in Nazca. So that's where she planted herself. She found a little house and stayed there, and then did all her work in that little tiny house, one-room house.
Wow.
And it's still there. I saw it. People can see it when they go there. They have it fixed up just like she left it.
That's amazing. When did you decide to travel down there? Hadn't written the book yet, or you had written it?
No, I didn't feel like I could write the book until I actually saw it myself, because I wanted to see, you know, what color is this place, and then I needed to see the lions myself. I had to get in a little airplane too, because that's the only way you can see them. See, people lived around there all the time, close to this area, but they couldn't see them on the ground. We're talking about figures that are, you know, hundreds of feet long and wide, and you just don't see. All you see is rocks. That's all you can see. That's all that's there. But from the air, way up high, you see that these are perfect images of monkey and hummingbird and lizard. You know, it's just incredible what you can see from above.
Now, you yourself don't speak Spanish, do you?
Yes, I could do. My stepmother it was Mexican American, and I learned, Spanish from her. She came into my life when I was 6 years old, and I did learn Spanish, and then in college I minored in Spanish, and I also studied in Mexico a couple of summers. I ended up teaching Spanish to junior high students, and yes, I could read it, and I could make myself understood when I went down there.
Did you have anybody go with you?
I made the trip myself. However, because I was teaching English in the college, I had also some students. I had one student especially from Peru. And when she said she was going to stay down there after the Christmas vacation, she wasn't coming back the next semester. I made arrangements to go down there because she would be there. We had gotten to know each other pretty well, and her name was Olga. And so she was my guide, and she brought along a good friend of hers named Blanca. And so the three of us made the trip. Once I got to Lima, we took their big bus, like the big Greyhound bus, and we went down there, the three of us. And they were my guides. I was very, very grateful to them.
Now, you still had to go up in the plane to actually see them, right?
Yes, I
Did they
did.
go with you?
No. They weren't up for that. They stayed. They were afraid. A lot of the Peruvians, see on the news small planes crashing here or there or somewhere else. They don't like those little planes. So they said, "No, we will go with you to the airport, but we will wait for you there." And they prayed the whole time I was up there in the airplane that I would come back safely. So I was grateful for that too.
So you got to see them from the air, and they also have a platform that you can climb up to see at least some degree
Yes,
of the
yes.
lines.
So Maria realized, after she had been writing articles and they were being published, she wrote in English and Spanish and German. So people from all over the world were starting to come to see these mysterious lines. And so they want, but when they got there, they couldn't see anything really from the ground, just rocks. So she had the government there to build this tall platform that you could stand on, and from some height, you could then make out these huge drawings around there. And that's what I also climbed up to see as well. And yeah, that's what people get to, if they don't want to go in the airplane,
Right. Well,
you can go up there.
do they have any theories about why these designs were placed in the ground to begin with?
Well, Maria had a theory. She was very knowledgeable of astronomy, and she watched every day living there where, you see, this is all up against the Andes Mountains. So she would notice where the sun was coming up and where it was setting every day, charting that. And she could see that on very special days like summer solstice and winter solstice, that the sun would rise or set right at the end of one of these lines. Many of the lines went straight to the mountain, or mountains, there's lots of them. And so she knew that in other civilizations, the native people were very keen about those placements of where the sun, sets. And they didn't have calendars like we do, of course, but someone was always checking, to see when the seasons were going to change. And so summer, what we call summer solstice, winter solstice, were very, very important. And that's exactly what she thought a lot of these lines were indicating, so that people would know when the seasons were going to change from winter to spring, then time to plant, and then from the summer. So she thought that they were connected to astrological meanings.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, down there, it is so dark. There's no light at all at night in that area, that the stars are just brilliant. And that's the southern sky. It has very different star constellations than what we see up here. And anyway, she studied all of that, and she thought this was all very connected to the stars and the moon and the sun. It was their astrological calendar, you see.
Really? Seriously? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, how is it that these sites, I mean, they're very vast and no one could see them on the ground, that they didn't get built up as people moved into that region and, you know, just erased under the, you know, the pressure of modern society?
Well, see, these are all on what they call the Nazca Desert, and no one lives there. One reason is nothing can grow there. So, you know, people had to live where they could grow their food.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very mysterious place in that there's nothing growing, not a cactus, you know, not a tiny little plant anywhere. And so they lived off of the desert where they could plant their food. But this area, 35 miles, you know, across in front of the mountains there, it seemed to be a place, maybe as they would have imagined, for their gods, for the great spirits who they believed lived on the mountains.
Yes.
It was a sacred space. And so people think that these were drawings that they made, maybe like labyrinths, that they could walk the lines and, you know, begging the gods, if they could please them, begging them to send rain. Well, it doesn't rain there. It's one of the most arid places on the planet. But what does happen there in the colder season is it snows on top of the mountains, and that water seeps down under the ground. And that's where they then learn to build their canals, under the ground, because the sun is so penetrating, you know, it would just evaporate the water if it was out, you see. So they had to cover it under the ground. All their canals, it goes from the mountains down, like, toward the little town of, not so little now, but it was in the little town of Nazca. To this day, the people in Nazca still get their water from those canals. They were built so well, so strong, and they, you know, the water never evaporates, and they still get their water from those aquifers.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Are they large enough for people to go into the aquifers, or is this all done?
Yes,
you know,
yes.
It is
people,
big. Okay.
See, because there are these little circular groups of rocks on the top to indicate where the wells are. They're one after the other. They're all in a line, see, on the top. So people know where the wells are, and in the middle of those circular designs is a hole, and they could go down into the hole, the center of these rings, and get their water. And I saw on television in a program called Searching for the Truth, where Josh Bernstein went down with his cameraman into the well, and you could see they're walking through this water, and he was amazed. I was amazed too, because I didn't see this when I went.
You hadn't seen it when you were there, yeah?
No, I didn't know this.
How fascinating!
What I did know from there was that the little hostel that I was staying at in Nazca with my two guides, you know, it was a lovely little place out in the behind, in there's a big yard, and here were the avocados growing and the bougainvillea flowers blooming. And I'm saying, I asked the owner, the woman there, who I was talking to, I says, "So how do you get your water? It hardly ever rains here, huh?" She said, "Oh, did you not see my well?" And she showed me where they kept the well. And she said, "This is water from the Nazca aquifers." And so that water is still being, you know,
used today.
Put
yeah.
down all the way into 11 miles is the town of Nazca. They all get their water from there.
From the mountain. Isn't that something? Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
These
things are 2,000 years old, those wells.
And still working.
Yes, it's still working.
That's just amazing. Now, did you, you used all this that you saw there in the design of your book, correct?
Well, yes, I needed to see, you know, the color I needed. The other thing I used was Maria's book that she sent me from Germany. You know, she wrote to them. It was published and gave them my address. And so when I got that book, that I really, really wanted that book because I had read somewhere it had all the drawings of these images. And I wanted them, you know, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so that's what we worked from with my artist. Yeah, I told him exactly which ones to use because they would fit my poem.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we have very authentic drawings in there. And it's from Maria's book.
Now, you did something that is not all that common. Which is the book is published both in English and in Spanish.
Yes, in the same book. That's right. So it is a bilingual book. And yes, I wanted people whose first language is Spanish to be able to read it, and people whose first language is English to be able to read it. I wanted this book to be available in Peru. And in South America, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they know more about these lines than most of our people know up here. But I also wanted parents up here whose first language is Spanish to be able to read something to their children in their first language. And it's hard for them to find just Spanish children's books here. And so that's what I was hoping. And then I also put this little CD where track one is English, track two is Spanish, into every book. And with the help of the CD, they can learn to read it in the other language. And vice versa, people who read only English can also learn how to read it in Spanish if they want
right,
to.
Right, right. What an ingenious way to become bilingual.
Yes. Yes. Well, yeah. And my real aim was to help the children who aren't in school yet learning to read, you know, to at least be introduced to what we call the pre-literacy skills that young children pick up as someone reads to them. They follow along, you know, they get to know the letters and different words, and they really fall in love with reading, you know. So if their first language, and many of the children that don't go to school yet, you know, they're speaking Spanish at home. So why not read to them in their
why not?
In the language
That's right.
that they know?
Yes, absolutely. Now tell me, have you won some prizes for your book?
Well, that first year, because I was working with the Colorado Independent Publishers here, they were very helpful in guiding me to find whoever I need, because I've never published my own book. But they did help me immensely. At the end of the year, then they send out the brand new books that have been made, not to people in this state, but into states beyond Colorado, to be judged, and they sent my book to the University of Arizona Press and to the University of New Mexico Press, and to be judged, and it came back that with such high accolades that this book won best in children's books that were published here in Colorado that year. So I got that award, and then they made a special award that they didn't usually give out. It was for its contribution to literacy, which meant more to me than any other prize.
Anything else, right? You're right.
Yes.
So where can people pick up a copy of Maria and the Stars of Nazca?
Well, right now, this book is being republished, and the hardbound book is out now, and they can find it on Amazon. And the softbound book is almost ready to go onto Amazon. And they have also worked to put this on Kindle, which children like to use a lot. And so we have tried now to make it available. And, we worked on three different ways to read it. Amazon is right now the place. And Barnes & Noble will get it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And
I would imagine other online booksellers would also have it available. Do you do presentations at schools and things like that?
Well, yes, now that school's back. I used to do that a lot. And then when the pandemic happened, that kind of squashed all of those kinds of visits to schools.
If they want to find you to do a presentation on this, because it sounds like a fascinating read and a fascinating subject, where would they find out about you and your services?
Well, I do have a website. It is www.nazcaresourcesbooks.com.
Okay.
Yes, and it also has a trailer, a video that you can watch. I wrote it and spoke on it myself. And there are two different publishers that I worked with. One is Ewing's, who put out the hardbound book, and now Book Savvy International is working on the softbound book. Yes, I've been approached by several publishers.
Yes, but I'm glad that Book Savvy is a lovely company to be with. So
yes,
glad you're
they
with
are.
Any
yes,
last thoughts you'd like to share about your stuff?
Well, I would recommend going to the website, because that my husband helped me to put that website together. He wanted to put several resources on it for children. So there, there are these word puzzles, you know, in English and in Spanish, that teachers could get for their students, or parents can print off, you know, for their children. So it's good for vocabulary if they're wanting to learn both languages. But I really want, I would love for like third, fourth grade students to have a chance to read this. So schools hopefully will want to put it in their library, because I want them to do a little research themselves. Now that there is Google, they can learn much, much more. And it, it will, you know, be a terrific source for them to do a little research paper. So I'm trying to interest a new generation in this wondrous place, and it makes people wonder, really, of, you know, beyond even what Maria had done, what more could they imagine from this place?
Right, right. So would you repeat your website again, where you would have people go?
They can go to www.nazcaresourcesbooks.com.
Perfect. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being with us, Anita. This is just such a fascinating subject for so many people, and we didn't even get into some of the weird things that are always being talked about for it. So, but just for the benefit of our listeners, we have been speaking with Anita Jepson Gilbert about her book, Maria and the Stars of Nazca. So thank you for listening. And as I promised, if you'd like to follow a passion that you may have, you want to turn into a dream accomplishment, please come to my vision workshop. You may register at www.embracepositivechange.com. And we'll see where it takes you. Okay. As we bring this in for a landing, Anita, thank you again for joining the show. This is just a wonderful topic to discuss.
Well, thank you, Susan. Thank you for your invitation. It was a delight.
Thank you. So bye for now, everyone, and have a great day.